I'm Derek Russell.
And I'm Brad Locke, and this is The Memo,
a gathering of all things Northeast Mississippi, brought to you by The Daily Journal and DJournal.com.
Hey, everybody, welcome into another episode of The Memo here on this Wednesday, October the 19th.
Who put a question mark on the script? You know he reads everything.
It's been one of those.
It is the 19th. You did well.
It's been one of those weeks. I can't keep track of what's what.
Well, yesterday was the 18th.
Yes, it was.
That makes tomorrow. Anybody?
The 25th?
That's it.
Sure.
I was told there would be no math in this job.
Exactly. Journalists and math don't mix. I sound a little bit too jovial on that intro, didn't I?
What? I've never heard you sound jovial about anything in your entire life.
Well, that's probably right.
Yes.
I try not to be enthusiastic about stuff.
Mission accomplished.
Cool.
Whatever.
My enthusiasm is all on the inside.
Is it?
It is.
Does it ever come out to play?
Not usually.
What makes you happy, Brad?
Sad fans.
Pardon?
Sports fans that are sad.
Oh, okay.
Have you seen some of the pictures I've been posting? You're not on Facebook.
Yeah, I am.
No, I haven't seen you on there much.
I try not to be because that's the place of the devil. when there's a minute and a half left and it's all down to a field goal
and they miss.
And they cut to
the guy with the surrender cobra, as they call it. The guy with the hands on his head or fans with their heads down.
Surrender cobra. I like that.
Yeah, okay. I didn't come up with that, but... Yeah, those kind of shots of fans that are despairing because their team lost.
So you take joy in the agony of others.
I guess, yeah.
Okay, well, that explains
a lot. But this goes
way
back now. Let's give a little background.
Okay.
Because I actually find this fascinating.
Dear God, we're going to step into his past.
Story time.
The psychology of Brad is...
Story time with Grandpa Locke.
...is a scary place.
Cue the music.
We're going to hear some tunes now.
When I was growing up and I actually cared who won sports games...
It was all black and white back then. We didn't have color.
If my team lost, I would be angry, but I would be more angry at the thought of the opposing team's fans being happy. Like, they thought they were better than everybody or something. I just hated the thought. I hated that more than the actual loss itself.
You hated somebody thinking they were better than you?
I guess. It probably goes to some deep inferiority complex they have.
Yeah, but, we could spend hours on this.
But anyway, just growing up, I figured out that really it wasn't so much that... Yeah, sure, I wanted my team to win, and that made me mad if they didn't, but I just could not bear the thought of other fans, like, gloating and trash-talking. And this was even before the internet, so it's even worse now. But now I don't care who wins, but I still hate to see fans gloating.
How did you make yourself not care?
A lot of hard work. Uh-huh. No, well, actually, covering Mississippi State for 5 years like I did, and just covering sports in general, you kind of learn to lose your fandom because you have to. Because you have to be, you know, objective.
So who are you a fan of?
The St. Louis Cardinals, that's it.
Oh, that's it.
Anybody else, I'm just whatever. They're a professional team I've followed since I was a kid, but I don't have any college team I root for in particular.
Yeah.
I don't even watch the NFL or NBA hardly. So I grew up kind of with that mentality, and now I've realized that I've always enjoyed seeing sad fans.
Well,
so
you heard it here first.
I even started a little blog chronicling some pictures, photos, or screenshots of sad fans. Yeah.
So you really just take this to the next level.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, well.
And that's the tagline on my blog. It said, happy fans make me sad, sad fans make me happy. Saddestfans.tumblr.com. Go check it out. It's good stuff.
All right. Well, I'm so glad that...
On that note,
it's okay. Chris is going to cut all this out.
No, he might not. I just wonder what's going on in that head sometimes.
You don't want to know.
It's probably all that product.
Probably.
Seeping in.
Yep.
Osmosisly. That's a word.
Is that a word?
Nah, it's just made
science.
It one. Yeah. Scientifically.
Okay.
All right. Well.
On that note.
Anybody else you want to make fun of or insult? Or
I'm not insulting these fans. I'm just... I don't know. I find some kind of weird satisfaction in seeing
people sad.
Well, and plus I think it's funny.
So like when a baby cries, you're like,
no, see, that's different.
No.
Because like I think sports emotions, they're real emotions, but they're like not necessary. Like why are you emotionally invested in a sports team populated by young men that you've never met and don't know you exist? Uh-huh. I find that hilarious that people do that. I mean, I did it at one time, and I find it hilarious that I did it. But, you know, I was a kid. I grew out of it. I don't know. I probably sound like a pompous, you know what, but I can't help
it. Yeah, well, I'm glad you said it.
It's just the way I think, okay? I can't help it.
That's fine. I can relate to the
Chris
covering sports.
Chris can relate to being a jerk.
Absolutely. That's what I do best.
Chris is like the opposite of a jerk, okay?
I can relate to the covering sports taking a lot of the fandom out of you, because it took a lot of it out of me, and I still... I'll watch college sports, but especially especially being what I covered, I don't really get emotionally invested at all. Stepping away from it allowed me to get back into especially pro baseball and to a certain degree the New Orleans professional sports teams, the Saints and the Pelicans, if they ever were any good. But especially the San Francisco Giants. You know, I've kind of gotten that back.
The Pelicans never were any good
since I stepped away from covering it. But yeah. But no, I know what you mean.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you just, I mean, I still like to, I mean, I like to see, for instance, I like to see Ole Miss and MSU do well in sports. I mean, number one, that helps our bottom line. If they win, we sell papers and get clicks and whatnot. That's just a business deal. But also, you know, I'm a Mississippian, so I like to see Mississippi do well in things. And so 2 years ago when they were both having amazing seasons, I thought that was awesome. Same. I mean, I still got the Sports Illustrated magazines with them on the covers. But, and I might sit down and be watching a game and say, okay, I'd like this team to win. You know, like right now, I'm kind of pulling for the Cubs to win in the NLCS. They're down 2-1, by the way, Derek. But I think they'll still come back and win. But if the team I'm pulling for loses, I just move on. And then I cope by posting pictures of sad fans.
What makes you cry, Brad?
Puppies, sunsets, babies, you know.
Puppies make you cry?
The usual.
I don't understand.
I'm a sensitive guy. Just the cuteness just overwhelms me with emotion.
Okay. I'll just cut his microphone off.
You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't cry much.
No?
Nope.
Chris? He's crying right now.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to go ahead and get some. He's like, oh, these two guys, I hate them so much. Every time I sit in here, I just... weep a little. All right, we're going to go ahead and get started today.
Hey, what do we got?
Caleb Bedillion's going to be joining us, as well as William Moore, Adam Robinson, and Jenna Parsons.
Jenna Parsons.
Talking about food. She'll be back in.
Talking about food?
Yeah.
Bringing food? Probably not.
No, probably not. Let's not put that out there. We do want to remind you that today's show is brought to you by Shoppers Value Foods on East Main Street, a locally owned grocery store. Check them out, Shoppers Value Foods.
All right, let's bring in Caleb Bedillion to the program now. What's up, Caleb?
I am doing well, Brad.
Man, you've been busy lately, haven't you?
I have.
You got a lot going on related to the Ronnie Shumpert case. Of course, the fatal shooting back in June. Shumpert was killed by a Tupelo police officer after a traffic stop. But you had a story about the lawsuit. The Shumpert family, of course, has filed a civil lawsuit against the city and Officer Tyler Cook, seeking at least $35 million in damage. Attorneys for the defense had requested a stay on that civil lawsuit. They were denied that motion. First off, kind of explain why they were hoping to have a stay granted.
All right, so there's not going to be a state criminal case.
Right.
The case went to a grand jury here in Lee County. They declined to indict. However, the U.S. Justice Department is reviewing the case. It's unclear. The Justice Department has not been very forthcoming with information, but it appears they're not independently investigating, you know, going and talking to witnesses again. They're just looking at the report of a Mississippi Bureau of Investigation report.
Right.
But, I mean, if after looking at that, they decide they're dissatisfied with the report, theoretically, the Justice Department could press forward with its own case and theoretically could file federal criminal charges.
Right.
So attorneys, defense attorneys for Cook and for the city of Tupelo had said, look, it'd be bad to have this civil case going on with evidence and documents getting introduced and then a criminal case come up later, because that could compromise the criminal defense. And there is a constitutional protection against incriminating yourself in a criminal action. So they're saying to preserve his ability, Officer Cook's ability to protect himself from self-incrimination. We need to stay the civil case.
Right.
Because what they call discovery, that's when evidence documents gets introduced,
right,
is broader in a civil case than a criminal case. You can demand things of the other side. You can say, you know, the plaintiff side can subpoena things from the defense,
yeah,
that you couldn't ask for in a criminal case.
And correct me if I'm wrong, is there a slightly lower threshold for judgment on something like that?
Yeah, I mean, I believe in a criminal case, the standard for finding, you know, some kind of cause for action is more likely than not, whereas in a criminal case, you have to, the state has to prove guilt beyond a
right,
reasonable doubt.
Right. I mean, like one high-profile case years ago, of course, was the O.J. Simpson case.
Right.
Not to compare the two cases, but just as an example, he was found not guilty, but then
In a civil case, was found liable for right, damages. So you have to remember, in a civil case, you're not being found guilty or right, not guilty. You're only right, being found liable or not liable, which is an entirely different
right,
legal category.
Right. But so anyway, U.S. District Judge Sharon Aycock on Tuesday denied the motions for stay, and saying that she doesn't believe that the Tyler Cook would suffer any substantial prejudice by the parallel proceedings.
Right.
So that means discovery process can move forward.
Unless there's some other motion attempting, you know, some other delay, then yes, the next step would be the discovery process, which means, you know, Carlos Moore has already subpoenaed the MBI report, which has hitherto been not in the public eye.
Right.
So if that were entered into discovery, unless it were entered under seal, which is somewhat unusual, but theoretically could happen, it will probably become public once
right,
it gets entered into the court record.
So we could perhaps get some new information at some point in the near future.
One would imagine.
Okay, well, that'd be cool. And related to this, of course, the city of Tupelo, after this whole incident happened, they formed these committees to try to enhance engagement with the community, and the Coalition of Concerned Pastors and Leaders had these demands, and apparently they're not happy with how things are going so far.
They don't think so. This was on Monday. The CCPL held a press conference, taking a look at these six working groups or committees that the city has put together. Most of those committees are either done or almost done. So the CCPL said that while they've tried to kind of lay low during the process and give these committees space to work, they think they've seen enough now to render a judgment, and they're not too happy. They think CCPL members were on some of these committees, but to be frank, they were on some of the more low-profile committees, like studying faith engagement or putting together job duties for a new community liaison position. Not really on any of the committees like community-oriented policing or
right,
a police advisory board, which were things the CCPO had asked for.
Yeah.
And kind of got the conversation going to a certain extent on some of that. So they feel they were kind of shut out of some of the more significant committees, and that city employees were kind of overrepresented
yeah,
in an attempt to kind of steer the outcome toward whatever Mayor Shelton wanted. Of course, I mean, it's worth pointing out, Mayor Shelton didn't have to do the committees at all.
True.
He could have just put together a list of recommendations that he, in fact, wanted and put that straight before the city council. So, I mean, to be fair, if he wanted to steer the outcome in a specific way, the
right,
doing these six committees was kind of an inefficient way to do it. Though I'm sure the CCPL would respond that, well, he's trying to have the appearance that
right,
he's seeking community output while still controlling the outcome. That's probably what they would say
sure,
to that.
Sure.
But there are three committees, community-oriented policing, civilian or police advisory board, and faith community engagement, that are supposed to present their recommendations to the city council at a work session next Tuesday.
Okay, and Shelton actually met with some of these faith leaders yesterday, had a luncheon, and some of these religious leaders actually are part of the CCPL. What was his message to them?
It was a pretty positive, forward-looking message. He was kind of emphasizing the, you know, the Tupelo tradition of, you know, what usually gets called the Tupelo way or the Tupelo spirit, emphasizing
yeah,
this kind of cooperative civic practice of engagement, pulling together in tough times and trying to work together for improvement. And it's, you know, we can disagree and still try to make a better Tupelo. kind of really emphasizing the All-America City theme. So the mayor is trying to craft a positive message and not really get into a back and forth with the CCPO.
I got you. All right. Well, good stuff here, Caleb. You can find Caleb's stories at a couple in today's journal and at djournal.com. And also had some over the weekend or earlier this week as well. Find them all at djournal.com. Caleb, appreciate your time as always.
Sure thing.
Hey, be sure to look for the two sports podcasts we produce here at the Daily Journal. Prep Rally is a high school sports podcast with myself, Gene Phelps, and Blake Morgan. New episodes air every Wednesday. You can watch the webcast live at around 11 a.m. at djournal.com or catch the replay later in the day. And the podcast version drops later on Wednesday. You can listen to it for free in iTunes, your podcast apps, or at preprally.djournal.com. So look for a new episode of Prep Rally today. And Ole Miss and Mississippi State fans, check out the Double Coverage podcast. Ole Miss beat reporter Parrish Alford and MSU reporter Logan Lowry release a new episode every Thursday afternoon, in which they provide game previews, insight, commentary, and analysis on the Bulldogs and Rebels. Listen to it for free in iTunes, your podcast apps, or doublecoverage.djournal.com. And hey, wake up and get ready for your day every Monday through Friday with the Daily Journal's News Break, a quick summary of news, sports, weather, and everything else Northeast Mississippi in a 5-minute video. Shows will be posted every Monday through Friday at 7 a.m. You can watch them for free at any time at djournal.com, Facebook, YouTube, or the Daily Journal's mobile apps for Apple and Android devices. Stay informed on the latest happenings in your community in an easily digestible format. And now we bring in William Moore, crime reporter extraordinaire for the Journal. How's it going?
Well, just crime reporter.
Oh, well, either way, I'd put that on your LinkedIn profile, extraordinaire.
Oh, okay. It's more impressive sounding. You can add that.
Okay, cool. You've got been kind of a busy week over at TPD, not good news, really, much of it. Let's start with the new police station that they had hoped to be moved into like 2 months ago, and they got delayed for various reasons. And now there's another delay. They had a water issue, didn't
it? Had a water issue. After basically 6 weeks of delays, they had hoped to do final inspections this week to start the process of actually moving in. And during a pressure test yesterday on the sprinkler system, when they loaded it up with pressure, one of the sprinkler heads upstairs popped open. They were able to catch it fairly quickly, but it was probably still drained out. All the pressure, and so there was a little bit of flooding involved in one suite upstairs, and then it dripped down into the suite below it. So they're in the process now of trying to figure out how much damage was done to carpeting, drywall, electrical, where the water went. So they don't know exactly how long of a delay it's going to be, but it's obviously going to set them back a little.
And cost a little more money. As well, I don't know how much, but
I figure this will probably be included in the process, since whoever did the test will end up having to pay for this.
It was a contractor,
right? It was a contractor. The city has not taken possession of the building yet, so it still belongs to the contractor right now.
Okay.
So.
Well, hopefully, no black mold comes out of that. They get it all the water.
I'm thinking that's one of the things they will definitely be looking at to make sure that everything is cleaned up and dried up before they take possession, since the former buildings they had did have problems with mold.
So does that mean the fire sprinkler system works or doesn't? The sprinkler
too well.
It worked too well.
Yes and no. Yeah. At least one of the heads works.
Yeah.
Or you could say it didn't work since it failed and sprayed water everywhere.
I mean, any idea how long? I guess we don't know how long this is going to delay. They'd hope to be in by the 1st of November, right?
They were hoping to be in by the 1st of November. You know, this is one of those things where basically they were going in Tuesday afternoon to look and see how much damage there was to get an estimate to figure out how long it's going to take to repair.
Wow. Okay. Well, it's a nice-looking building anyway, at least from the outside.
It's a very impressive building from the outside. I mean, you know, they have all the landscaping done outside now, the sidewalks, flagpoles built, painted, all the different work on the facades. I mean, it's going to be a very nice building. I mean, they're chomping at the bit to get in it. I mean, this is the first new building they've had since 1966.
Well, it's only been 50 years. That's all. Let's talk about another story related to TPD. Sad news. Alec, the canine officer who was involved in the Ronnie Shumpert incident back in June, went missing Sunday. Apparently, he had escaped his kennel, and they found him Tuesday, and he had died, apparently struck by a vehicle.
Correct. It's one of those things where, it's a 10-year-old Belgian Malinois. He apparently dug his way up under a fence.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a fairly new enclosure because they were trying to make sure they kept him in, but he was able to find a way out.
As dogs tend to do. I have one, yeah.
And they do sometimes.
Yeah.
And, you know, apparently he went out. I mean, it's in an area with several very well-traveled roads.
Yeah.
And so it appears that he got hit by a car, you know, and just then didn't make it.
Yeah.
You know, the family was hoping to have a, you know, private burial. It's a family member for the handler, Tyler Cook, you know, and his family. They've all known the dog for years.
Right.
But unfortunately, that part's going to have to wait because there is a federal civil lawsuit going on.
Yes.
And the Shumpert family's attorney has asked that the city preserve the dog as possible evidence and have an autopsy done. And late yesterday, city attorney Ben Logan said, you know, yes, they were planning on doing that.
Okay, yeah, because, you know, there was a question of whether the dog attacked Shumpert or if he injured Shumpert, and the TPD has said no because, you know, his teeth are kind of worn down. He has no canine teeth left. He really couldn't have done that damage. You know, the wound to the groin area was actually a gunshot wound. Carlos Moore says it was the dog, and so on and so forth. So that's mainly why.
There's a whole question of whether or not the dog attacked him, or if the dog did attack him, how much damage was inflicted.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, that's one of those things that unfortunately will have to be sorted out in a court of law before, you know, the dog can be laid to rest.
Right. Well, that's a tough thing, a sad story, although the story's much more interesting if you actually go and read on Facebook what people have to say about it, but I would not really. I mean, because it is, I mean, of all the canine officers to have this happen to, it happens to be the one who's prominent, and it happens shortly after
this
case. The
one who was in the news a couple of months ago, and the dog mysteriously escapes. And
that's fueled some that's fueled online a lot of chatter.
Conspiracy theories.
Yeah, well, I'm not big into conspiracies, but anyway, we'll keep track of this story, William, and the water situation as well at TPD. Appreciate your time.
Glad to be here.
Remember, you can watch the Daily Journal's Capitol View webcast each Monday afternoon at djournal.com. Capitol Bureau Chief Bobby Harrison provides commentary and analysis on the issues being debated in Jackson. Watch live on Monday afternoons at 2 or catch the replay later in the day. The 2016 legislative session is now over, but Bobby will continue to provide perspective about the news coming out of the state capitol. And now it's time for today's news memo. For more on these stories, you can read the Daily Journal or visit djournal.com. Celebration Village will throw its doors open wide today. The annual holiday market will feature 140 vendors bringing clothing, art, jewelry, decorations, fashion, home accessories, cooking ware, and more from across the Southeast. It supports the work of the Sanctuary Hospice House. The event is being held at the Tupelo Furniture Market in Building 5 and will begin with tonight's preview party. Doors open at 5:30 p.m. and they will begin serving hors d'oeuvres at 6:30 p.m. Tickets for the party are $50. Shopping continues from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. on Thursday and Friday, and from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Saturday. The daily shopping pass is $5 in advance and $7 at the door. Friday's Girls' Night Out includes shopping, food, dancing, and pamper stations. There you go, Brad. Breakfast with Santa will be held on Saturday morning. Those events require separate tickets. Meanwhile, the much-anticipated auction of the tiny house has been delayed until the spring to give crews more time to complete the project.
A couple charged with robbing a Pontotoc County post office last month will remain in federal custody until the case is heard by a grand jury. Angela Roy and Richard Thomas Scott are accused of robbing the Randolph post office on September 23rd and shooting Postmaster Virginia Duff during the incident. A preliminary hearing and a detention hearing were held for Roy and Scott on Monday in Oxford, with U.S. Magistrate Judge Roy Percy ordering them held until the resolution of the case. Scott has been charged with assault and armed robbery of a postal employee, while Roy is charged with aiding and abetting the assault and armed robbery of a postal employee. The two have also been connected to car burglaries in Nettleton and Pontotoc. The grand jury is expected to hear the case in about 2 weeks.
Home goods could be added to the mix of tenants at the mall at Barnes Crossing next year. If plans come together, the stores will fill space in next to Dick's Sporting Goods. There has been no official word from the mall at Barnes Crossing, but preliminary plans show a 24,015 square foot space next to Dick's. Home Goods is one of the brands under the TJX Company's umbrella that includes TJ Maxx, Marshall's, HomeSense, Trade Secret, and Sierra Trading Post.
Home Goods is a bedding, furniture, and housewares company founded in 1992 in Massachusetts. It has more than 520 stores in 45 states at the end of last year. The nearest locations are in Olive Branch, Memphis, and Collierville.
Mississippi Senator Hobb Bryan has expressed concern with both the motives and the time restraints of those looking to revamp the state's public school funding formula. Bryan was the primary author of the Mississippi Adequate Education Program, which the state currently follows to determine school funding. He said legislators, school officials, and others worked for more than 2 years to enact that program in 1997. Last week, House Speaker Philip Gunn and Lieutenant Governor Tate Reeves announced they have hired New Jersey-based EdBuild to modernize the formula. The goal is to have a proposal ready when the legislature meets in January. But Bryan said with the holidays quickly approaching, he does not think there's enough time to hold public hearings and develop a new recommendation. He said he is concerned with the secrecy of the current process.
The third annual Oktoberfest in downtown Tupelo on Thursday kicks off a few busy days in the All-America City. The event will be held at the Farmers Depot from 5 p.m. to 10 p.m. It will feature more than a dozen local and craft beers brewed with the Oktoberfest theme in mind. Tickets cost $20, include a beer stein and two vouchers for two full-size beers of choice. Meanwhile, back-to-back concerts at the Bancorp South Arena will be followed Saturday by the annual Susan G. Komen Race for the Cure and Pigskins in the Park at Fair Park. For Pigskins in the Park, tailgating setup can begin at 2 p.m. The Mississippi State game at Kentucky begins at 6:30 p.m., and the Ole Miss game at LSU starts at 8. The Alabama and Texas A&M game will also be shown beginning at 2:30.
Hey, Derek, you think I could go to that girls' night out, Celebration Village? I need to get pampered.
I think that would scare away all the girls' night out.
Well, more pampering for me.
I have no comment on the matter.
Okay. Today's show is sponsored by Shoppers Value Foods, a locally owned grocery store on East Main. The store recently changed its name from Palmer's, but the owners and the employees haven't changed. Damon Palmer and his brother Jason are the third-generation owners of the East Tupelo grocery store that was founded in 1957. The Palmer brothers have teamed up with last year's Grocery Wholesaler of the Year and decided to go with their Cost Plus program. The store now sells its groceries 10% over cost. That's allowed it to add more variety, especially in the meat, produce, and dairy departments. Along with the name change came a refreshing of the interior, new signs, and better parking. So visit Shoppers Value Foods for high-quality selection, great customer service, and low prices.
Photographer Wonderboy Adam Robinson joining us this morning. How are you, sir?
Just fine. How's it going?
I'm well. It's good to see you.
It's great to see you.
It's fantastic to see you, even though I just saw you but a few short hours ago.
Yep. Out in the woods.
Out in the woods.
Do I need to do this interview?
No.
Okay.
We need to keep your mouth shut over there, boy. Adam, you spent time with a horseshoe maker. Those are called?
A farrier.
A farrier.
Yep.
Or just farriers. I don't guess you put the A in front of it, but there you go. This is pretty cool. Where did this take place? Where's this guy out of?
Craig McMillan lives in the, he's listed to be living in Nettleton, but he's more of a mobile farrier. So he's gonna come to you instead of you bringing, you know, your horse to him. But he has a couple of horses on his property, and he's like, hey, I'll just shoe one of the ones that I've got here, needed to be done, and that worked out well.
There you go. Kind of like the blacksmiths of old.
Oh, exactly right. There's a lot of blacksmith in what he does, and, you know, there are pre-made shoes that people use, but this is from scratch. About 11 to 12 inch long of steel that he used, and about... 3/4 by 3/8, and that makes one shoe. And just to sit there and watch the process, which was what I was, you know, looking for. I was looking for someone who made it, not someone who pre-orders their shoes and goes out and puts them on. And, you know, it's just an amazing thing to sit there and watch that strip of steel be turned into something that's going to be useful. I mean, he puts the I'm trying to find my correct terminology. It's been such a long time since I shot the page, but the creaser tool, he uses that, and that actually is used for traction and to hide the nail head.
Yeah, the nail head just looks painful to me. to look at the whole thing. So did you watch him from beginning to like the, from beginning to completion?
The whole shebang. He had already done two hoofs, and he had done the last ones, saved those for when I arrived. And he, you know, he moves pretty fast. He's been, you know, 20 years experience or more.
How long does it take from start to finish to do one of these? Just one for a horse?
One shoe, let's say, I'm just going to 20 minutes, 25. Oh, okay.
Like from putting it on and, yeah, and everything?
Sizing it, getting it ready.
How does he size it?
Well, Mikey, I think he said, was a one in a size. And he just... I guess you just know what that size is.
Yeah.
I didn't see him use any measuring tool at all. And
well, at this point, I'm sure he could just eye it.
Exactly, yeah. Right. And he puts the hot shoe onto the bottom of the horse's hoof. Of course, it's steaming like we've got in one of the photos.
Right.
But that's also helps him when he pulls the shoe away. He sees where the hoof burned onto the steel,
mm-hmm.
and where it didn't, well, it's uneven. So he takes it back to the anvil and he pounds it out a little longer, and then he, you know, takes it back, and also some of that burning singes away some of the unevenness, and then it's on. And he does a lot of filing. I was amazed at how much filing there was. I mean, you file, but you know, before
and then after you got it on the horse.
Yeah, and you know, you file the horse's hoof. You got to clip away a lot of dead material, and then he files it. He files the shoe before it goes on. And, you know, he said you could easily harm the animal if you didn't know what you were doing.
Yeah, it almost looks like it's harmful. I've seen it done before in mm-hmm. person, not the creation, but just the putting it on, and it almost looks painful just to see it go on there. So,
yeah, horse never flinched.
Yeah.
So Mikey, know that you're... Mikey never flinched. And Cowboy, the other horse, watched.
Well, this one was cool, Adam. I really enjoyed it. Thanks for coming on today.
No problem. This was probably the my favorite one that I've done, and I guess I'm the most pleased with it.
Turned out really good. That's some cool pictures of just the red hot horseshoe, and then the steaming horseshoe as he's putting it on, and mm-hmm. of course horses are pretty. So, yeah. That was a Monday's paper, yes.
It was on, yes, mm-hmm. Monday's paper from the 17th. So go check out Craig McMillan.
Yeah.
And
also djournal.com.
Correct.
If you need a new shoe. Jenna Parsons joining us on this Wednesday. No food, but that's okay. We forgive her.
No food.
She's been on vacation.
Right.
She's still recouping.
Right.
From her long week away.
Right.
How was
the beach?
Florida, yeah.
It was lovely.
Was it?
We were worried we were going to have traffic going and shortage of gas and, you know, all the headlines that were telling about the damage and destruction. It did happen, but it did not happen to the area where we went. We were very fortunate.
They were too busy talking about Trump, so they didn't get to...
Yeah, there was a Trump rally while we were nearby.
Well, that explains the hurricane.
Well...
Hey, you are spread out all over the place in your column and your Cook of the Week today. One from Holka, one from... Is it pronounced?
Dumas.
Oh, Dumas. I'm sorry. I thought maybe it was Dumas.
Your proper talking head.
Dumas.
Yes, exactly. Gail Heal is a retiree that you interviewed for Cook of the Week this week. What did she prepare for you?
She made... What didn't she prepare?
I was going to say, are those cinnamon rolls?
They are homemade cinnamon rolls and homemade sourdough bread. She sent me home with a loaf of that. And
you didn't bring that to us?
Well, no.
Why?
Well, because I interviewed her more than a week ago. You wouldn't want it.
Freeze it.
Right.
It didn't hold up.
She made chocolate chip cookies that are her grandchildren's favorites. She makes them just the way they like them. And then she also made...
Plentiful, I guess, is the way they like them.
She made a pan of Swiss steak, I've never had Swiss steak before, but
Swiss
it sounded
steak.
Sounded
yeah.
good.
Yeah, that's good.
Have you had it before?
I have. That's not pictured here.
It's with the recipes inside the food section.
Goodness, she just did it all for you, huh?
Well, she told me that when one of her grandchildren came to visit the other day and brought a friend... And when they were fixing to go play ball, and when they were leaving, she said to her granddaughter, "Would you like a coconut pie or cinnamon rolls or chocolate chip cookies?" And the friend
said
looked
all three.
At her granddaughter and said, I wish she was my nana."
Oh.
I'm sure a lot of...
Because my nana's dead.
Nana doesn't cook.
I'm sure that a lot of those kids wish that Gail was their nana.
Wow.
The way that she's always got something cooked. And she taught for 28 years. She taught gifted kids, and she taught 8th grade social studies, and she retired. But now she works part-time at the Baptist Church there as a secretary. And she sells, she's a distributor, let me say, not sells, for some healing oils that she's really into. And she showed me some of those and how she's used them to help people. She's a very interesting woman.
I don't see how anybody can have energy to do so much after teaching for 28 years. I feel like all your energy is used on...
Gone. It's gone.
You know, Brad's got 5 kids, and look at him. He's only 23, but look how old he looks.
Oh, man. He doesn't look a day over 55.
Whoa. Dang, Jenna.
It's the gray hair.
Yeah. It makes me look distinguished.
He's got to paint it on every morning. Then Holka, for your column, the 4th Annual Cornbread Festival. That sounds like a place I should go and then be miserable for a few days after.
I have never been to their cornbread. I didn't even know they had a cornbread festival. This
for
is the
four
fourth,
years, Jenna. They've
well,
had
this
one.
Is the fourth year for it. And Floyd Ingram at our sister paper, the Chickasaw Journal, told me about it. And it happened while we were on vacation. But it sounded like it was the happening place to be in Chickasaw County a couple of Saturdays ago. They had a great turnout. It was that first little cool snap with the blue skies and the crisp weather, so that brought people out. And they I think they had more than 25 entries, different entries of cornbread, that some in the regular category, some in the special, and some in the Mexican. But Laureen Huffman is the one that won the special category. And if you looked at that recipe, you can see why.
I mean, it's got ground beef in it.
It's got ground beef. It's got cheese. It's got corn. It's got bell pepper and jalapenos, and it's a meal.
There was no sweet cornbread there, was there?
You know, there may have been.
She didn't go.
I don't like sweet cornbread.
I don't either.
Some people
it's blasphemy.
Some people put sugar in their cornbread.
That's a cupcake.
But the thing about Laureen is she found this recipe and had never made it before. Can you imagine just finding a recipe and making it and say, I think I'm going to enter this in a contest. I'm not that brave.
I can't imagine finding a recipe and cooking it. So
well,
the first part of that just seems distant enough to me, much less the second part.
Of course, the question is, do you and Brad even like cornbread?
I love it.
Well, okay. All right. Here's something we agree on. Chris, do you?
Of course.
Okay, if it's not sweet.
Right.
My mamaw's cornbread, God rest her soul, was the best I ever had.
I think when
I
it's...
I wish she was my nana.
When it's... Your nana's dead.
So is mine.
So is mine. I
just
think
imagine
when
say that to a child.
I thought I just did.
Ouch.
Oh, dang.
I think when it's sweet cornbread, it's called Georgia cornbread, and it's more like a sweet, cakey cornbread.
Mm. Well, this looks amazing.
I just can't imagine what
it even looks like, though.
She said she had no idea what it was going to look like when they cut it.
Like a shepherd's pie?
Well, they have to cut it into little pieces so that the judges can taste it, and then afterward they serve it to the participants at the festival. And she said when they cut it up into those little squares, it was the prettiest thing.
So she didn't even cook it for herself
and then go, I'm going to enter it.
She just cooked it and entered it.
Found the recipe, made it, and threw it into a contest and won first place in her category.
Well, wasn't she cock of the walk?
And her sister, Birdie, won first place in the regular cornbread category.
Oh, it's rigged.
And then there,
I call rigged.
And then there was a tie in the Mexican cornbread category between Melinda Simmons and Harlan Galloway. So I guess both of theirs were so good they couldn't pick one over the other.
I think the three of us should take the memo to the 5th annual Hulk Oak Cornbread
Let's
Festival.
Do it.
Yes, we should.
Let's do it.
And just be.
Where's this held at again? Chickasaw County?
Chickasaw County, and it's I believe it's always in early October.
We'll just give ESPN style commentary throughout the whole thing and eat cornbread. Jenna, yes. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, Derek.
Yes.
Another fine show.
Another mediocre episode.
Yeah, well, you know,
for the day.
We sort of tried.
We halfway tried.
Yeah,
there was some effort.
There was.
We showed up. Participant trophy.
Listen.
What?
80% of life is showing up.
That's deep.
I don't know.
I was told there would be no math.
86%.
Oh, okay.
86%?
It's gone up in the last couple of years.
What?
The other 14% is actually doing something.
That's millennials' problem, the reason that number has gone up. I'll tell you that much right now.
It's dang millennials.
That's stupid millennials living in their parents' homes. 86%?
You're not a millennial? I guess you're
I'm on the border.
You're kind of in between that
I'm on
and
the
Gen
border,
X.
And I don't claim it because they give us a bad name.
I guess I'm firmly in the Gen X category.
Old.
Whatever.
I'm on the cusp.
It's kind of funny to see all these Gen Xers getting old, too. It's kind of, I guess that's why we have 90s nostalgia.
Well, you know, that's, who was I talking to? It may have been Rod I was talking to this about this the other day. That's why we see so much of this stuff coming back that we had when we were kids, is because now people our age are in marketing, and that's why all this stuff's getting brought back
works.
Around.
That's why
Crystal Pepsi's back.
That's why 10, 15 years ago, all the 80s nostalgia kicked up.
Yeah.
And now it's the 90s nostalgia. I don't know what they're going to do about 2000s nostalgia.
There's going to be a lot of NSYNC
Britney Spears
and
Tamagotchis. Britney Spears was 92 as well. She came around in the mid-90s.
Right at the end.
Mid-90s. I remember 95, 96 when she hit the scene.
It was like 98, 99.
Brad remembers well.
I remember.
When was your first Britney Spears concert?
I didn't go to any. I don't like her. But I remember because I lived with a couple of guys when I was in college. And
1998 was her first single, Shut Up.
Well, I just remember... My friend, my
come
roommate.
At me with the Britney Spears knowledge that I just
remember
Googled.
My roommate, and this was actually probably 97. My roommate had a poster or something of Britney Spears, so she probably hit the scene around 97, 98, whatever. Yeah.
That song came out in 98.
Okay,
that album.
I'm just telling you what I remember.
And now I will sing.
My
for
roommate
you.
Was a huge Britney
Spears. Britney
Spears,
fan. 1998 single, "Hit Go. Me, Baby, One More Time."
Bum,
that
bum,
wasn't
bum,
her first
bum.
Hit though.
What?
That wasn't her first hit.
I don't know, Brad.
The first hit was...
Yes, it was.
I don't think it was.
That was the first one.
You guys have way more Britney Spears knowledge than I ever imagined.
I don't know why I know this.
I don't think that was the first one.
Let me just...
Was it? I thought it was... No, Oops, I Did It Again wasn't the
no,
first
No, that was not.
I think that was later.
It was about the only two songs I know of hers.
No, 1998.
Okay, whatever. Stand by my...
Wikipedia doesn't lie, Bradley.
Right. Never lies.
Wikipedia doesn't lie. Hey, we'll be back tomorrow. It's not Thursday. It's Wednesday.
Ah, yes. We'll be back again.
Got to do it one more time. Got to get your hopes up and disappoint you one last time this week.
As we do.
As Halloween approaches, we wonder, what will Brad be for Halloween?
Frankenstein's monster. That's what I've...
I appreciate you saying Frankenstein's monster and not Frankenstein.
Because Frankenstein is the doctor.
Thank you.
Yes.
Appreciate you. Actually, it's pronounced Frankenstein. But
yeah, whatever. I prefer the American pronunciation. Mm.
Chris?
You got me. Still working on it.
Sad fan?
Maybe. Yes, you just come as a sad Giants fan.
You've been that throughout October.
Ooh. Yellow.
Sad.
Especially if the Dodgers win.
Oh.
Sadder. Ooh. It's been hard to watch.
What team do you hate the most? The Dodgers?
The Dodgers.
Yeah, Dodgers easily. Really? Nationals are next.
Yeah.
And they Nationals played each other
right
in the first round.
The Dodgers. Why the Dodgers? Like his eyes twitching. I saw smoke come out from the headphones.
How do you answer that? Why the Dodgers?
Yeah.
It should be obvious.
Why not the Dodgers?
If I have to tell you, then it's...
Oh.
He's a Giants fan. Obviously, it's the Dodgers. Okay. And then they hated each other back when it was the Brooklyn Dodgers and New York Giants.
All right.
It's a rivalry.
So all it's right. still, yeah.
Because in 1993, when the Dodgers kept the Giants out of the playoffs.
I just like the Mets. Meet
I
the Mets.
You're a Cubs fan.
I am a Cubs fan.
Yeah.
I want to get a shirt made. You would appreciate this. We talked to Hamilton the other day, too. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to get a shirt made. I just got to find a cheap way to do it that says Aaron Burr was a Dodgers fan.
Nice.
Yes.
Very nice. All right. Well, we'll be back tomorrow with another episode where you can expect shenanigans and tomfoolery.
Yes.
Brad is shenanigans, and I'm tomfoolery.
Yay.
So
that's what they call us.
Until next time, you can find us online, memo.djournal.com, where new episodes are posted. Those push to iTunes, Satchel, and many other podcatchers where you can listen to us, subscribe, and rate and review. You can also find out when new episodes are available. Available by going to twitter.com and following us at djournalmemo. And all the stories we discussed today, if Brad gets them up online, will be available at djournal.com. Yes.
I'm working here right now. Podcatchers. I think I saw them open for Wilco once.
They were there with the Muddy Butts or whatever their name was. Musky Butt. What is it?
Jenna said it was... No, who was it that said that?
Yeah, that wasn't on Jenna. Air. You'll have to explain.
Musty Butts?
The
Musty
Eileen Butts? Eileen Bailey's...
Some band.
Brother,
I believe.
Who? Second cousin twice removed was in a band called the Musky Butts.
That's a great name.
Yeah.
And then I mentioned Diarrhea Planet, which is one of my favorite bands. Probably the worst band name in history. Of course, the guy, when he formed the band in college, formed it. He named it that as a joke, didn't think that they'd make it big. I know they're pretty popular, and so you're stuck with it.
I've never heard of them.
Really? No. I've got most of their music. I'll let you listen to it.
No, I don't want to, thank you.
It's good. Man, they got four lead guitars.
I'm going to... That's excessive.
And it sounds good.
Nobody needs that. All right, we'll be back tomorrow with all new episodes.
Bye.
Goodbye.